Welcome to Season 2 of Forged in Fire, where we explore LGBTQ+ leadership with guests from all over the world. You'll hear as they share how they navigated their journey through crucible experiences to develop into amazing leaders. Forged in Fire is hosted by Colonel Bree Fram and Dr. Liz Cavallaro.
Hi, I'm Bree Fram, an astronautical engineer in the U.S. Space Force. I'm passionate about building the leaders of tomorrow and learning about what the LGBTQ+ leaders of today can teach us.
And I'm Dr. Liz Cavallaro. I'm an adult development scholar and associate professor at the U.S. Naval War College. I'm also an experienced researcher, interviewer, leader development practitioner, and professional executive coach. Please join us as we discover the inspiring stories of how LGBTQ+ leaders are forged.
Welcome to Forged in Fire for our Transgender Day of Visibility episode. We are thrilled to be joined by Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria believes in leadership through service. She serves as the Chief Visionary Officer at the Connie Norman Transgender Empowerment Center, and as a consultant, she provides strategy and capacity building to various organizations. She also serves as Queen of the Royal Court, and she is President of Flux. Both are international networks dedicated to raising the profile of trans and gender nonconforming communities. Queen Victoria Ortega leverages her intersectionality to guide organizations and systems towards transformational change that is both meaningful and effective. Additionally, she's been a member of the Los Angeles County Prevention Planning Council, the Los Angeles County Commission on HIV Health Services, the Transgender Service Provider Network, and the California Endowment's Building Healthy Communities effort. Some of her most recent efforts include producing a documentary, Trans Mexico, and hosting Royal Tea, a talk show on LA TV described as an inspiring, fun, and fierce half-hour talk show honoring excellence in the trans and non-binary community. Queen Victoria Ortega, we are so thrilled you're able to join us today.
I'm glad to be with y'all as well, and I'm glad that we got to finally the Ortega, because the introduction says Queen Victoria at the beginning. I'm like, I'm the other plus-size woman on this side of the pond.
Well, we are thrilled that you have joined us, and one of the reasons we wanted to have you on as our guest is because of all these incredible things you've done to empower other trans people, as this is our Trans Day of Visibility episode. We recently caught you on another podcast, The Trans Agenda, which to me is to not be tired because of all the things that we do. But you on there said that trans people take pain and turn it into purpose. We turn adversity into strength. And you could have been absolutely writing the title of the book that we're putting out shortly on how the LGBTQIA community creates impact from adversity. And it's through that amazing turning of those crucible moments into purpose and a strength. And we are so excited to explore how you became the strong leader and trans person that you are. So I know that, you know, you came out at a pretty early age, but even then, there was a long period between when you knew something was different and when you came out. Even though they were both young, how did you get from one to the other? You know, from starting from a place where you knew you had to hide something.
For me, it definitely, I think one of the things that most people might not understand about people who transition is when they ask us the question, are you sure? It's really a joke. A lot of us can basically start laughing out loud because it's something that we've contemplated and pondered for quite a bit of time. And for me, at 5 years old was when I really thought, you know, something is different about me. And it wasn't until I was 16 when I actually came out and said to my parents that I identified as a trans person. And in between that time, where some of the questions that I was asking myself as in my existence was like, who am I? Where am I? I was going through puberty at 12, and it also sparked the question of like, well, where do I see myself? Because, you know, we have certain kind of dreams that happen around that time in puberty, wet dreams. And I was a woman in my wet dreams, to be quite honest. And so it made me wonder, like, what's what about me is different? Is there some, I did wonder at that time, is there something wrong? But I was able to use my library card, which was a powerful tool for me to be able to use at that time. And my parents highly encouraged reading. So I was able to get books, and I was able to find books that also were not talking down about being a trans and non-binary person, but instead were uplifting. And I think that really set me up for the person I am now, including in my own upbringing with my parents being supportive of my transition.
Yeah, I want to just add that I heard you, critical thinking was encouraged. How did you turn that inwards to yourself? And how have you then later applied that to everything else that you've done?
Well, one of the things that I don't get to talk about much because folks don't really think of trans people having a childhood. They think like it starts at your transition and that's the beginning of who you are. And that's not necessarily true. We're the sum of all our experiences. And for me, I grew up with parents who, I like to say, tortured me with books. So if I wanted anything, my parents were like, well, you have to write an essay in order for you. You have to read this book and write an essay. So and as well, my father was a philosophy minor, but realistically, he wanted to be a philosophy professor. So I got to talk about the allegory of the cave. I got to read, you know, Octavio Paz, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, Sun Tzu, The Art of War, when I was a kid, realistically, and have discussions with my parents and see my parents have these discussions with others. So critical thinking was not alien to me. It became a fiber of who I am and really of my family, the Ortega family, being always questioning, like, how can you do things better? How do you solve a problem? Life is a series of problems, and how do you solve them to move forward from an optimistic perspective? Like, where do you find the gems along the journey of life? And I think that's always been a part of who I am. And I also think it part of who our community is, part of who the trans community is. You know, we redefine. It's part of our heritage to not only create our couture selves, as I like to say, but even here we are redefining the American dream, right? As we talk about Trans Day of Visibility, and in an election year, we're redefining that on our own terms, even facing adversity through many, you know, oppositions. And critical thinking is part of that. We had to critically think of who we are. Therefore, we're going to critically think about our journey. I also think it also makes us responsible stewards of many things that people think that we might not be able to handle and question our leadership. But the reality is we are forged in the fire, you know, to put a pun in there, right? Our metal is strong.
Absolutely. And there was so much more than just reading lots of books going on in your household. You have activism running in your family, both parents as Chicano rights activists, and that also blossomed in you from an early age. So was there something internal that drove that decision, or was it external factors? How did that come about for you?
I think that most people will contemplate like nature versus nurture, and I think it was a perfect term of both. Right. I knew that my parents were involved, and in a very early age, we were involved in like translating documents for asylum. We were talking about Chicano rights. My father's role in, you know, the Chicano moratorium in school, and his role and my whole entire family's role, who all served in the armed forces, and used the GI Bill to go to school. So I saw it and I lived it, and it became more of a focus and purpose once my transition initiated, and knowing that this was my mantle of leadership to take on. And it's always been a mantle of leadership among our family I remember my parents say, remember, you're an Ortega. And it kind of always stood in my mind, to be honest, that it was something that we knew that inextricably we were going to be, there was a sense of social responsibility tied to our last name. But my purpose came through trying to find myself, right? And I have a prayer that I always say of help me be of service to myself and others. And most people would think, well, why would you put yourself first, right? And I think that we could only bear good fruit when we are a healthy tree to be able to bear that for others.
I like to say it. It's taking that advice that we all get whenever we get on an airplane. Put your own oxygen mask on first, because unless you're taking care of yourself, you can't take care of others. But I think it's so interesting. You talked about translating in there and how translating can help build bridges between cultures and build connections between people. But you have, as a trans person, I believe, this ability to take multiple perspectives that is so important. And that's often a key leadership trait that we find among trans people because of our experiences. But something like that, the ability to take multiple perspectives, can also come from speaking multiple languages. And I know you speak three languages. Has either your transition or your fluency help develop your ability to see things differently and to help drive change?
I think that one of the early things my parents, again, were exposing myself and my sister, because it's only two of us, to multiple races, multiple cultures, multiple foods, even as kids, because they were organizing and cross-organizing and coalition building. And we don't live in a silo, right? As a community, as a world. And one of the things that was important was for us to be able to interact with folks and be able to contemplate from a critical thinking perspective that not everybody's the same and not everybody's scary. We're not the scary, you know, trans non-binary people that we're oftentimes painted to be. We're actually sometimes quite boring. I like to say, if I didn't have the name Queen Victoria, I would be the boringest person most people would know. However, you know, it is something that I also picked up in being able to navigate spaces as a Latina. I think part of it comes being and living my world as a brown person. I've had to know how to code switch, right? And part of that has been, again, through what people would deem survival, but I will take that tool and make it into something that I go from survive to thrive. I take code switching as another form of, you know, languages. I've had to learn how to speak Caro, which is a colloquial language for Chicanos that we are able to speak in East LA. I had to learn how to speak business for when I'm in places that require me to speak in the language of business, for people to understand that I'm also here for the economic empowerment of our trans and non-binary community. Nonprofit speak. And all those, the ability to code switch, I think also comes from just the sheer experience of life, right? Like where you pick things up. I'm really trying to know, to learn the language of wealth management to take it back. And I think that for me, no matter what languages or abilities I acquire, I want to share them. And that's, I want to come up and come up together, as we say.
Well, I'm sorry for saying only three languages, because clearly it's far more than that.
Yes. And a little bit, I mean, of the, I guess the recognized languages. I try to do that because I do see myself as an ambassador and representative to community. In many of the spaces, I get to be the one. And I don't only get to be the only one. I get to be the only one that happens to be brown and a plus-size woman. And that comes with a lot of already expectations, right? Whether it's because I'm a plus-size woman or because I'm a brown plus-size woman.
So many unique aspects of yourself, certainly not boring. And you mentioned the name Queen Victoria, which is not only unboring, but it also connects to that sense of social responsibility and sense of duty that you've been talking about. Would you share a little bit about choosing Queen Victoria?
Sure. So my mother liked this magazine called Vanidades, and which is basically Vanity Fair, I guess it would be in the Mexican version. And one of the things she always kept up was, they have a section that's always about different royal families, right? And so that was one aspect. And then the other aspect, upon reading like historical figures, is the sense of, you know, duty and responsibility that I picked up in the late Queen Elizabeth II. Like when they were asking, like, who's the person you look up to? They're like, why would you like this old lady that dresses in monochromatic form and, you know, has gloves and, you know, can be a symbol of colonizing the world. I didn't see that. I saw the part of the responsibility and the duty I also, most people don't know that Victoria Kaolani is actually who I chose, not the English version of Queen Victoria, but Princess Victoria Kaolani was the last princess of Hawaii who went and fought and tried to ask for the freedom of Hawaii after it was annexation by the United States government. And just to see her journey inspired me. And I said, you know, whether it's the warrior queens, Boadicea, whether it's Princess Victoria, who was destined to be the queen of Hawaii and never was, that is the definition of who I am, right? It encompasses in woman, warrior, queen. And I embody that and live through that in purpose in my life every day, knowing that I have the unique privilege of walking through the earth, of being in spaces that oftentimes my community might not be in, but they can come with me. And I'm going to try to bring as many people as I can with me, as is my duty. Now the responsibility of being a symbol of continuity and prosperity also is part of that. And there's an image that goes with it, right? We're talking about trans-tale visibility, and most images are manipulated, or there's a story that is told from a specific perspective that is not our own as trans and non-binary community. I've taken hold of my own narrative. I've taken hold of my own destiny and my own image, and I'm using it for the benefit of myself and others. And I don't intend to stop this Trans Day of Visibility or any others, but to move it forward.
Speaking of those caricatures of trans people that are out there that we try and change with stories, stories like yours, stories of successful, amazing trans people who are pushing the community forward, oftentimes the people that hold those really negative stereotypes don't want to see, don't want to believe that those successful trans people can exist. How do you work to change that narrative with the people that almost want to be deliberately blind or deaf to the reality of trans individuals?
Well, I kind of operate in the law of thirds, right? A third of community or a third of people will be for you. They're your homies. They're going to be there for you no matter what. They are your role dogs, ready to go when you say it's time to go. A third is going to not want to have you exist at all, right? And in that case, I'm just who I am consistently. They may not change their mind, and they're not going to, and that's their prerogative. However, there's the third that is also kind of in the middle trying to make up their mind. And I think it comes through showing our humanity. It comes through the opening of our heart. And it's like, what I always share is that when we are able to connect at a human level, all the labels fall apart, fall to the wayside. I mean, they fall to the wayside in the sense of like, when we show up in our whole selves. And I think that the beauty of the trans and non-binary community, as I mentioned before, and you mentioned, you know, is the fact that you can give us a rag and we'll make a gown. You give us pain, we, you know, create purpose. You give us, you know, hardship and we create, you give us adversity and we create strength. But deeper than that, I think that we are not a monolith. And most people have this story of like, we are a monolith, and we're not. We're just like everyone else, right? Wanting to connect at a human level, wanting to love, wanting to be part of our community, wanting to be part of this country. And I think that once we're given the opportunity to do that and people see that, it changes hearts and minds.
So the changing of hearts and minds is clearly such an important ingredient in making progress and impacting change. You actually said in a 2017 interview, "A lifetime of nonprofit work and activism has given you a practical outlook on bringing about systemic change." And a lot of leaders, particularly in advocacy spaces, find that they have to find a way to balance idealism and realism. How do you do that? And do you have any advice for others that want to make those systemic changes?
One is having found my tribe, having found the people that are around me that are a team that pick me up when those hard days that we all have had and that we feel like, okay, I'm ready to throw in the towel, is an important ingredient. Second, I can't leave out my family. As the matriarch of my family now after the passing of my parents, family has been super important in my support system. Because you might get a no, but no's are not always forever, and right. And so I also credit my Virgo tendencies of being very patient and like a drop of water can carve through a rock, right? You can be that little drop by just showing up and being yourself, where inevitably people do change. And linking up and strategically with folks who are around you. Who comes to mind is my two sisters, Bambi Salcedo from Transatina Coalition and Queen Shayla from Unique Women's Coalition, who have very different strategies. Mine's is kind of like the chess player. What are some of the strategies we're going to look at? My sister Bambi is the one that breaks the door down. I'm on the other side of the door and be like, oh my God, Bambi kicked in the door, but let's contemplate why. Let's have some questions around that. And then the process happens where people are dealing with their emotions, whether they're angry or they're not. And my sister Queen Shayla is the heart, right? And so being able to find your tribe and that you can work in unison and play to each other's strength as a team is what changes things, right? Doing it alone, when we start thinking that we're alone, because we're not. That's the big lie. Like, oh, you're alone. You're weird. You're the outlier. The reality is no. There's over 1 million transgender people in this country. And I think it's underreported. But, you know, we are not alone. And we're a community that is, that internal fortitude is ingrained in us from even just our transition. Do you know the strength that it takes to be able to open a door? And for eons, there's two choices that you have. And we're saying, hell no, I'm going to be who I am. The gumption that it takes. And that's why I love my community, right? Because we will face a lot of adversity and continue to move forward. And one of the other things I learned is policy and systems change, right? This country is driven by laws. And one of them is things are in black and white. So one of the things that I learned from being in Building Healthy Communities in Boyle Heights, which is all cis people, but I got to lead the community engagement committee, is that policy and systems change is a key to undoing many of those things in this country. Laws, that's why it's so dangerous that we have so many laws that are being proposed that are anti-trans in nature. And so being able to have laws that protect trans people like we do here in California is also what makes a difference.
Given that political space that we're in and seeing all of these laws that are now impacting the LGBTQ and particularly the trans community in such a negative way across much of the country, I'm reaching back to a really old interview you did where you said that your long-term goal was actually to run for office. Has that changed, or have you found other avenues that have really allowed you to make the impact that you want and to help set the policy and the legal landscape that exists for trans people in this country?
Absolutely has changed. Yes, I actually joined a political action committee made up of LGBT people. And I quickly found out that it wasn't for me. And I also found out the permanency of being, you know, in political office. And someone said, it was actually in the movie, The Queen. They say politicians have always resented the crown because politicians come and go, but but the monarchy stays, right? And I thought like, oh, there's much more longevity in being the queen than being, you know, in political office. And I really thought about that process and said, you know, it's no longer for me. However, it doesn't mean that I cannot be civically engaged or not encourage our community to be civically engaged, because there is power in being able to cast our vote. And we're making changes in that area as well.
You said a word a moment ago that really stood out to me, which was gumption. And you've had the opportunity through the kind of work that you do to create spaces where there are LGBTQ individuals coming together and fulfilling a variety of different roles. So you've gotten a chance to do what we do here in Forged in Fire, which is to observe the leadership capabilities and the amazing superpowers that LGBTQ leaders possess. I think gumption is one great example. And I wonder, what are some of the other things that you've gotten to observe?
One of the things that I've gotten to observe in the leadership development of trans and non-binary communities. It's not alien to any as a human being, right? Which is a little bit of a dab of, and I talk about cooking all the time because, you know, I love to eat, you know, a dab of gumption is definitely part of the recipe. But I also think part of it is upskilling, which is one of the new things that I'm using. And in talking to leaders across the country is we need to up our skills, right? And we are doing so by creating our own institutions. I've started in 1996 in the nonprofit sector and kind of deconstructing and seeing what are the pathways, what are the tools, and what are the skills that we need to learn in order to step into those spaces where we're now having the, you know, places like the Trans Empowerment Center, 20,000 square foot space, ran by for trans people, Trans Athena Network, an 8,900 square foot space in Chelsea, New York, right in the city. Bambi is getting ready, Trans Athena Coalition is getting ready to build out their first ever 21,000 square foot space owned by, and the building owned also by trans and non-binary people. So we're learning those upskills, as what I like to call them. So gumption, learning skills, always willing to introspect and thinking of like, how do we do this better? Right. I think are part of the, are definitely part of the process of leadership that I'm seeing happening in trans community, learning from our decisions and I'll call them mistakes, right. But they're decisions and how do we move those forward? And sometimes, you know, you break a few eggs when you're making an omelet. So it's okay. And making sure that we don't stop in the movement forward, knowing how to trust your team, knowing how to trust each other is the next level. I'm seeing that now we're starting to do that as well.
You talked a little bit about the impact of forming teams with other people that may have that more kick down the door mentality with the strategist and the other people that can kind of come together to form something that really makes change. Is that the impact that some of these safe spaces help develop within the community just to allow those teams to form? Is there something about having things like the Connie Norman or Center that encourage growth among the community?
Most definitely. It also encourages connection, right, within community. It encourages community to, since talking about visibility again, it's like to see each other. And I say see each other not in the form of like you just physically see each other, but I say it in the form of the Avatar version of the movie when they say, I see you, right? We're seeing each other into our souls. Like, again, we don't have to agree in every single thing out of 10 issues that are affecting the world and the community. But one that we do is our transition and our right to live as human beings and experience. And experience love, experience work, experience leadership, experience the world. And I think that the ability to have spaces, physical spaces where we can bring communities together is where things even shift. Because most, like I mentioned before, we're not a silo, we're not a monolith. And how do we also challenge each other and even move the needle of like the way that we view things through life? It's happened for me in regards to sex work. The needle has moved much, right, from my early activism to now.
In terms of those spaces, one area in particular that you've worked in is creating LGBTQ spaces in media production and ensuring that there's representation all throughout the organization or the flow of production. So writing and producing and starring. How does that change the impact of the programming itself?
I think it changes the impact when you are intentional about staffing. One, it's not easy. Let's put that out there first. It's not easy and it's not meant to be. Anything that's worth anything is not meant to, it's not going to be easy, right? And it's also scary. And, you know, the unknown at times because people are going to be like, well, is it going to work? It's not going to work. But if it ain't scary, it ain't big enough in my book. So that's the way I approach it. So in that sense, it was a commitment that we've made to make sure that trans people, one, again, upskill and are able to learn new skills. We also link with mentors who have been in the industry for a long time so that there's wealth knowledge being passed. But the secret sauce that can't be taken away is the lived experience of the people who are behind the lens or in directing that could advise and also put in their two cents of what we're doing in that production. So we're telling an authentic story. And one of the things we're seeing in the industry is things being regurgitated, redone. This is not redone. This is new. This is new content. This is stuff the world has never seen. And they're human stories, right? That connect across gender, across socioeconomic status. They're human stories that people can relate to.
With those stories, you have seen so many amazing stories. How do you pick which stories to tell when you are looking at who's on your show or what do you want to produce and develop? What stands through as the stories that need to best be heard?
It's definitely difficult because there's definitely a lot of inspirational stories. One of the reasons why I feel like I could wake up and do my work from 7 a.m. to late at night because I don't get tired. I'm in love with our community. And for me, I think that the filter is what needs to be told at the time, what's happening at the time. The second is how can this story be conveyed at a level and in a way that's going to connect to other human beings outside of the trans and non-binary community? Because I also think, again, we're not going to live in a fishbowl. And thirdly is what is the availability of the person who's going to be able to contribute and their bandwidth, right? One of the things that oftentimes is not considered is the person whose story it is, right? They own the story. And I think that oftentimes the permission is not asked and people then just move it forward. And I think when people are ready to share it, it comes from a more powerful place, especially when we're talking about some things that can be pretty impactful and traumatic, like either being HIV positive, not having parental support or a family unit that supported you in your transition or just in life. So I think that that's one of the things that it makes us moves us in the direction of choosing what's the content that's going to move forward. Is it relevant? Are people ready to tell their story?
So having a story told where someone's not ready or a failure to gain permission, that really links up to something else that comes up on this podcast a lot, which is the undue burden on the marginalized individual to be the representative or to be held out as the example or to have to do all of the labor in representing and trying to advance their particular community. And it's something that happens a lot. And you yourself have taken on a responsibility and that sense of duty that you've spoken about. But it's also a lot. And how is it that you navigate that and maintain your own wellness and put on that oxygen mask to provide yourself the kind of self-care that you need to continue pouring into others?
Thank you. First of all, I charge. That's one of the things that I've also learned, right? Every so often, they're like, let me pick your brain. And my saying is, okay, you could pick my brain if I could pick your pocket. Let's start from that perspective, right? And then the other is, I've been a longtime advocate, having created the first Transgender Economic Empowerment Fair here with the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center, is pay people what they're worth. Pay trans people for their labor. And I think one that helps psychologically, and I feel like it also helps, you know, in actuality, where people can pay the rent, pay a bill, pay the roof over their head, and address their Maslow's hierarchy of need of feeding themselves and sheltering themselves. I think that has shifted for me because that's become my bread and butter as a consultant and being able to advise, guide, and warn the institutions and governments of the day on creating trans-affirming care and spaces. The other secret, such a secret sauce, I think that, you know, we should share that. That, again, I go back to saying, like, having an amazing chosen family, an amazing family have been undoubtedly like a hack. If, you know, most people like to share hacks on TikTok, is finding your tribe makes the load of life just much lighter, and you don't have to do everything alone. Finding and connecting with others have been that way of me able to recharge my battery and say, you know what, I'm leaving to December, in December and in June, well, more like July because June is Pride. But in December and July, I usually go to Paris, which is my favorite city in the world. I don't know if I have a past life there, but I just feel, it just feels like home, right? And so it recharges my batteries. The team knows and is like, you know, don't bother Queen Victoria right now. She's shopping. And something as frivolous as shopping, you know, most people think, oh my God, I'm going to have like this deep thing that I do and meditate. And I guess my meditative state is shopping. And I love walking into a place, the way it smells, the way the environment, the way that things are presented. And it actually has helped me. Looking at heritage brands is how I manage my brand. So it's relaxing and learning, and it's allowed me to weather a lot of storms, having a amazing chosen family, having the ability to disconnect and put myself first periodically throughout the year, and enjoying life, living it. I travel a lot.
Love that you do that and have those things that recharge your batteries, because it is so critically important. And I like that you mentioned Maslow's hierarchy of needs. What I think is interesting is it's a big challenge sometimes for a leader to identify where the people around them are on that hierarchy of needs. And it's often very different in trans communities of colors than it may have been for me as a white trans woman who came out with a history of performance and a stable job. It's very different to figure out where people are. How do you counsel other leaders to understand and figure out where people are and what they need to move up that hierarchy?
So one is I just feel, like I said, I'm in love with the trans and non-binary community. And I just feel that we're just badasses as a whole. Like just being able to like come out, live our authentic selves that some people will never get to take shame off and set it to the side and say, I'm not going to live under the burden of shame anymore. Already puts you in like a level for me that is like, you're equipped to do whatever the hell you need to do to be able to live this life. So I think that from there, we're already like, well, the rest of it is easy peasy, right? Finding a house or finding a job or creating our businesses. And I think that that's where I approach it from, is looking at where people naturally have, and I advise leaders to play to people's strengths while also teaching them to skill, to build up skills in places where they may not have strength. For example, if I met my one of my chosen family members, my son, Prince Paolo, came as an intern, and the conversation that we had, because my colleague wanted them to file and do all this stuff, and I'm like, what do you want to do? I want to be in film. Okay, well, then if that's what you want to do, that's what we're going to do. We're going to create a film around Transgender Day of Remembrance as your internship. So we're going to play to that strength, and that's what they do for a living now. Right. And that happened in 2014. So I tend to, and even with the staff that I work with, I always have that conversation, is what are your professional goals as a person? And then what are your personal goals? And how do we make sure that that happens? I am a great believer in physically, you can tell, of you can have your cake and eat it too. And that's where I approach it from.
That is a beautiful example of what you were talking about in terms of the authenticity, the ability to have that self-awareness of knowing who you are, what you want, and then live it, and live it without shame. And there's such a tremendous superpower in that. But it's so interesting, that authenticity. And then you also talked earlier, which I thought was super cool, talking about going to Paris and observing the heritage brands to think about building your own brand. And that's also really important, right? Is to be able to shape that and message it in a very deliberate, crafted way. So how do you utilize that skill set to help other trans and non-binary individuals that you're working with?
I have that conversation of sitting down, like, who do you want people to know you to be, even when you're not in the room, that when people are able to share your story, they know like, oh, okay, that comes from this specific person's view because that's what they do, right? And it brings them joy and it brings them purpose. And I think that that's one of the major things of like sitting down and really having those conversations, because oftentimes people ask, what are you doing 5 years from now? And I always trip people out because I'm like, what do you want to be doing 30 years from now? I do that all the time with every single leader that I work with. And they're like, I don't know. Right. Well, but we need to know where we're going. Right. There's a process that I like, which is called POP, which is purpose, outcome, and process, which is a mini version of a logic model. And sometimes like people are like, wow, I'm going to think about like outcomes, activities, and resources. And they're like, it seems too difficult to think about a logic model. I'm like, but if you cook, you do it every day, right? What are the ingredients you need? What is the process you need to put them in to get the desired outcome of the bomb chile relleno that's going to taste good, right? Because it is that process to get there. And once we break it down and we're able to digest that, it no longer seems like an impossible task, but it seems like something that we can achieve the same way that we cook and nurture ourselves through food. We can nurture ourselves through making sure that we not only take the thought, say the words, put them down to paper, create the plan, and execute the plan so that we get the outcome that we desire. And it's a form of magic that I like to call it, right? Manifestation is not just you think about it, you talk about it, but you're putting steps there to get to the process. And I always share the story that like my parents kept things that I created when I was 5 because there's power in the things that are written. And I tell community, write it down, take notes on it, write it down, make sure that, you know, if it's something that's stirring your heart and your soul, write it down so that you can sit down and actually plan it out and execute it. And oftentimes I think we're not allowed to think that because we're said, the sky is falling. It's all going to end. You know, you're going to be squashed out. I'm like, do you know from what fabric of people and where you come from with historically of trans and non-binary people that are part of your lineage of who we are and how much strength there is in our community? All we have to do is be able to connect together with our community and see that strength lives in us. Once I think people discover that, it's life-changing. I love to see that switch happen. It's what I live for. Sometimes it takes a while. But once it's there, it's like, wow, they like just take off running. And it brings me so much joy to be able to see from 1996, having just 3 jobs, for example, in Los Angeles, California, that were for trans-identified people, to now hundreds. And now thousands across the country. And now people also thinking about the ability to start our own businesses, you know, where it might be making glassware for restaurants where nobody knows, that has nothing to do with your transition, but it's just, you know, something that everybody can use.
Well, you warmed my systems engineering heart talking about inputs and that we know we have and the outputs we know we want, and then working on the magic that happens in the middle to how to get there. And also in talking about, well, what is that 30-year future? Because I am firmly of the opinion that will life be better for trans and queer people in the next 3 to 5 years in this country? Maybe not, but in 30 years? Absolutely. But we still have to work to get there. And I think one of the interesting things that happened really recently is your California primary and what you did to have a voting facility within a trans-owned and occupied space to make space for the community and really to celebrate and encourage participation in democracy. Is that one of the keys to unlocking the impact of the LGBTQ community?
Of course. I think that it was also an intentional message of, we are part of the fabric of America. We are part of the American dream. And not only that, we are redefining it, and it relates to other folks because the White House with the picket fence doesn't even apply to most Americans anymore, right? And in that process, we want to make sure that our voice is heard, right? Most people don't know that at any given point, the Department of Defense is the largest employer of trans people in this country. And we have so many trans veterans that have put their life at risk or have spilled their blood for the freedoms that we enjoy every day. And trans Americans deserve the same right that everyone has to be able to vote in a place that is safe and welcoming. And that was the point of being able to create that. Even the Trans Empowerment Center, we host so many, we're trans focused, but we hold so many LGB events and we are welcoming to all. And then one of the thought process that came in creating the Poly Center is if you create a safe and welcoming space for the most marginalized, one of the most marginalized community, then it's safe for all. Right. And because most people wanted to make a mountain out of a molehill of that it was going to be trans exclusive only, and that we were going to shut the doors to it. But that's not who we are. It's never been who we are, which is one of our superpowers that most people don't know about. It's like we connect with folks because we've lived a life. And for some of us, we've lived many. And we're some of the most amazing people that you can get to know once you give yourself the chance, the opportunity to get to know us.
Well, in addition to giving as many people as possible that opportunity, I'd just like to ask you about what else you hope to see in the future. In particular, we're so grateful that you agreed to join us on this podcast, and we're wondering, what would you like to see as a result of this work?
So I think that what I would like to see is definitely more people investing into hearing the stories and collecting the stories of trans community. I hope to see a future where there's a national trans and non-binary museum with the contributions of people who have created change. I know that both of you have created and given to our country as well. So thank you. And I think those stories need to be heard and documented and archived as well. So I think that that's one of the things that I would love to see. Furthermore, as I said, overall is trusting the leadership of trans and non-binary community from the ranks of business to politics to investing in their businesses. For example, if they want to start a business creating glassware. I don't know why I always talk about glassware in restaurants. Maybe that's what I'm gonna do next. I definitely want to see that. I want to see that the continued investment in collecting and telling the stories of trans and non-binary community, which I think will be mutually beneficial to all who are involved.
Queen Victoria Ortega, you talked about how everyone owns their story and it's up to them to tell it. And we are so thankful that you were willing to share the story that you own with us. Even though we know it was just a tiny fraction of it, it's powerful. And those messages that you are able to help share, that empowerment that you are able to help spread, is so vital. So we thank you for being an LGBTQ plus leader of character who is really sharing that wealth with everyone. And thank you for joining us today on Forged in Fire.
Thank you for listening to this episode. The views and ideas expressed by the hosts and guests of this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the organizations or institutions they represent. Forged in Fire is a collective effort brought to you by a fantastic team of passionate individuals. This podcast is produced and engineered by Frida Castellanos, media production by Christina George, operations by Imogene Thomas, and communications by Chelsea Asplund. Brief Ram serves as executive producer and hosts the show along with Dr. Liz Cavallaro. But we couldn't do this without the inspiration provided by LGBTQ plus leaders around the world working hard to build a better future for all. For more information, visit our website at forgedinfire.org.